Welcome to the Vortex Nation podcast, brought to you by lovers of hunting, shooting, public lands, the Second Amendment, and good food.
All right, what's up, everybody? You probably didn't get to see, and that's a good thing.
We have video. We'll post it.
Oh, good, Eric. Oh, great. You will get to see the me setting up of the podcast equipment, and by me, I mean mostly Aaron, who's snapping some photos right now, because we struggled a little bit. I struggled a little bit. There's lots of wires. This is MC Ryan's forte. He's a master at it. Basically, anything with electronics, I shouldn't be allowed to touch, but I don't know.
You did work the lock pretty good on the door this morning. After the third attempt, we got in this room. That was good.
Yeah, left door. But I think all these point to a single contributing factor. And that factor is, I have not had a cup of coffee this morning. I think, Sawyer, you're in the same boat.
My shirt's on backwards, dude. I don't know what to do. I need caffeine.
A lot of us start our day this way. I know I do, but I've been saving myself for this moment right now. And that's because I've got Eric to my right, Sawyer across the table, and we're joined by Tony from Dark Timber Coffee, /owner, entrepreneur, coffee roasting master.
Coffee drinker, mainly.
Yeah.
Consumer. Yeah.
Customer.
So, Tony, if you can, introduce yourself. And actually, before we do that, back up a sec. What we're going to talk about today is pretty much everything coffee and what goes into making a good cup of coffee.
And that's how to get that buzz.
And how to get that buzz. I need that. Tony, I need to hit zero.
Yeah.
Always chasing that next high.
Yep.
I'm sick, Tony. So tell us a little about yourself and Dark Timber.
Yeah, my name's Tony, owner of Dark Timber Coffee. Dark Timber's been around for about 3 years, but I've been in the coffee industry almost 20.
Right.
As a master roaster, director of coffee. So all that history goes into Dark Timber. We mainly specialize in backcountry style coffee products, gravity packs, vapor packs, things like that. We also source and roast all our own coffee. We source from all around the world, import it, and roast it in a roastery.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
In a nutshell, that's kind of...
So, and I think, you know, you're originally from kind of the PNW, right? Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, born and raised in King County, actually.
Which is kind of, and so that's kind of my OG neck of the woods. But that's kind of, I feel like that's kind of like a coffee epicenter of kind of where a lot of, you know, this transition from, you know, maybe buying a can of Folgers or instant coffee.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the concept of paying $5 for a cup of coffee was like, you know, just completely asinine. Nobody would, and now it's just commonplace now.
Yeah,
it's so kind of like grew up in that coffee culture.
Yeah, that sort of espresso culture, like milk-based espresso drinks, was basically popularized in Seattle. Starbucks, a lot of those Wet Whisker, a lot of those like OG kind of coffee companies, and then there's what's called third wave coffee, which originated in Seattle as well, which was like that next step above, which was single origin coffees, getting a little bit more in tune with, you know, for sort of a farm to cup, you know, style coffee, starting to, you know, control all the variables in terms of like espresso preparation, whether it's freshness of your coffee that you're using, the roast styles that you're using, temperature, you know, pressure, things like that. That all kind of, you know, started in Seattle with Vivace Coffee, really.
Yeah.
Mark Stromer.
Interesting.
When did you have your first cup of coffee?
Do you remember this pivotal moment in your life? Our family had a deli in downtown Seattle on Dearborn Street. And this was back probably, 91, I would say, 92. And it was kind of right when espresso was being popular. Right. So we had an espresso machine in the deli. So it was a sausage company. So we made Copa and pepperoni and things like that. But in the front, there was, you could go in and get a sandwich, or you could buy pepperoni ends or things like that. We had an espresso machine there. So I was always sort of obsessed with that machine and constantly monkeying with it and everything. So I guess that was the first time I had espresso, but it's also the first time that I made an espresso drink too.
Oh, okay.
I was like,
did you like it the first time you had it?
It wasn't what I thought it was gonna be, but it didn't turn me away from it.
Yeah.
I remember as a kid, I think we were at like some office, right? And my mom had a cup of coffee and I was like, I want one of those, you know?
Yeah.
She's like, you don't want one of those. I'm like, no, I want one of those. And she's like, fine. you can have a cup of coffee.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was probably like, I don't know, 6, 7.
Yeah.
And
wee lad.
I think she was anticipating that I'd be like, ugh, yuck, yeah. Disgusting.
Loved it.
I loved it.
Oh,
one of another.
You animal.
Yeah.
I had coffee growing up. I had coffee on Saturday mornings when I was in like grade school.
Oh, man. Really?
Rugrats and
you're so sophisticated. Yeah, I mean that's a very nice word for it. Yeah. I don't even remember why I did. Yeah. I think I just liked it.
Yeah,
5-year old Sawyer's
got his surprise me.
Got his nose buried in the stock market section.
Just wired, doing the New York Times crossword.
Yeah. Like. I've never met someone more dependent on it than you. I think yeah. Like when you don't get your coffee in the morning, it's like, oh man, this guy might be ill.
Yep. It is a dependency.
So like, let's talk about that though.
Like, no doubt.
Like, is that legitimate that it is a dependency, or is that like a placebo effect?
I think
effect,
on a certain level, right? There's some dependence to it, or reliance on it, right? And then there's like the ritual of it, more so than a lot of like if you didn't have coffee yet, or, you know, caffeine or whatever yet, you might have a headache or something.
Yeah.
But you know, try going with decaf for a few days and.
See what that does.
Might be psychosomatic, man, right?
Like it's a cultural norm, too. Yeah. So it's just like the normal thing to do. Like, you wake up, you have a cup of coffee. Like, mm-hmm. It's just become so, like, ingrained in, like, professional culture as a whole. It's just, like, the normal thing to do.
Well, and I was even talking to a buddy of mine who's in sports medicine, and he was saying, like, for workout regimens in the morning, like, if you're someone who works out in the morning and you drink just, like, I don't know, like a cup of coffee about 20 minutes before your workout, it'll help you get that perceived energy boost that propels you through a workout. And I think that can be translated whether it's workout, hunting, setting up the podcast machine, you know. I think having that, getting that little bump, if you will, I think goes a long way for folks.
It does. Yeah, it absolutely does. I think coffee is really what's driven America, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
That's the soundbite we're going to chop out.
Like, waving the flag.
Yeah.
I know I've a couple times, like, whatever, something's going on in the morning. Maybe I haven't had enough coffee, but I actually, you know, you talk about a ritual. Like, I have a cup of coffee in the morning, and then I pour myself a Yeti cup of coffee, and then I have an open top. So that's the one that gets nice and cool on my way to work. Yeah. But, like, there was one time where, like, I was driving to work and I couldn't figure out what was wrong. And I'm like, what's wrong? Like, and I had forgotten my coffee. The world might as well have been spinning the wrong direction. Like, everything was, anyway, it's important. Everybody start drinking coffee.
Yeah.
If you're not, you need to.
Yep. Fix yourself.
Join us.
Yeah. Join
us. But so yeah, I mean, we're talking about, you know, kind of like this coffee culture and everything goes into it. And I mean, I was trying to write some stuff down. You're talking about, you know, single origin, proper temps, just everything that goes into that. So like what, you know, maybe explain maybe even like the life cycle of a coffee bean so people can kind of like figure out like where is exactly, you know, A, regionally or, you know, in the world, where is it coming from?
Right.
And then like that process and then, you know, you sourcing it, getting it here, roasting it, you know, how long does a green coffee bean stay good for, you know, once you get it here, all that good stuff.
So it's a lot of information, but we'll start where it's grown. So majority of the coffee in the world that's harvested and imported or exported is coming from Brazil, right? So that's the number one main export of coffee or production of coffee. And then it's grown all the way through Latin America, Mexico, and there's a little bit actually grown in the United States, Southern California on the coast there.
Sure.
They're growing a little bit over there. It does okay, but it's in terms of production, there's not much there.
And is that a soil type that's more conducive to coffee?
Climate.
Mm-hmm.
Climate. So you can't have frost. Frost will kill coffee.
Yeah.
Okay.
So anywhere you have frost, you can't grow coffee.
Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, you could grow coffee, one, in your house.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Two, in a greenhouse situation.
Right.
Right, where you're controlling the climate inside the thing, right? But in terms of a yield on something like that, it would never be viable.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you're consuming the coffee that's coming off those trees, but not as a sort of means of production for the market.
Interesting.
Yeah. And then it's also grown East Africa countries, Kenya, Ethiopia, they're big coffee production countries. And that's kind of where the story is, where the coffee originated from.
Okay.
So like when we use Yurgachev heirloom coffees, that means that like that's kind of the original coffee sort of from that region, right? So it's not like crossbred and things like that for production in even a certain area.
Yeah, yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And then will like the different soils in these areas affect the ultimate flavor of the bean or what you get out of that bean?
Yeah. So where they're grown, like the soils, the climate, the regions will all impart a certain flavor on that coffee, right? So if you think about a Guatemalan Huehuetenango or an Antigua, those are going to have a very distinct flavor, right? And then you talk about an Ethiopian Yirgacheffe. That has its own flavor unto itself. Like, you won't ever really find a coffee that's going to taste like that. So, like, when I taste that flavor, I know exactly what that is, you know. So, yeah, each individual area is going to have its own little flavor on the coffee. And then how it's cultivated and how it's grown by the farmer, you know, has a big impact on the flavor itself.
Yeah. Right?
So, if a farmer's taking really good care of that coffee, knows how it wants to grow in that area, it can really have its own distinct flavor.
So
and then there's different strains like Mundo Novo and different strains of coffee that's going to have its own kind of cup profile.
Okay, gotcha.
So once you get it, and we're sitting here right now, we've got the gravity packs in front of us. When you're serving coffee, you know, at home or at the office, whatever, what are the things that you can do that impact flavor? Because you touched on temperature there.
Yep.
And I feel like that's one that I've heard a lot. Like, you don't want to serve it too hot because then it'll be burned.
Yeah.
Could you just kind of elaborate on that? Like, what is that sweet spot of temperature?
Temperature, like 180 for drip coffee.
Okay.
Yeah, you want that end product to be coming out at 180. It can start out at 200, but once it hits, like, cold mugs or cold carafes or things like that, you want that temperature to kind of drop. You don't want the water going into the coffee to be towards boiling. Right,
because
then you're going to be burning that coffee.
Yeah,
it's going to taste burnt. It's not going to taste good. If it's cooler than 180 or something at brewing, you know, as it's brewing, you're not going to be extracting those flavors and those compounds that you want in the coffee. That's going to give it that flavor that you're looking for.
Yeah.
It's what's going to be called under-extracted.
It's a really good tip for like French press. A lot of people think
French
it's got to go boiling.
No.
Straight to the carafe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's a good tip.
Yeah, just invest in a little meat thermometer or something that'll get to that temperature. Make sure it's calibrated in ice water or something, and just make sure you're testing that water if you want to get that nerdy with it.
Yeah, yeah, interesting.
I do want to back up here in a minute and kind of talk about like that, you know, that path that the coffee takes before you brew it. But while we're on this, one thing I want to talk about, like water. Like the water you use, I mean, is that going to affect, you know, the flavor of your coffee and
absolutely.
The end product?
Yeah, absolutely. If you live in a hard water area, Texas, Dallas, all that, you're going to have a lot of heavy stuff in your water, minerals, calcium. It's really hard there because it's coming from the ground out of these like aquifers in the ground, you know. It's full of all that kind of stuff. Places like Washington, that water's coming right off a glacier or off a mountain, right? That water's really clean, really fresh. You don't have to use any sort of filtering system or reverse osmosis system there. But in the southern states or kind of in a little bit and your water's a little sketchy, you might want to treat it or use like a bottled water.
Okay.
And then
a drinking water, not like
Okay, that's what I didn't ask. Is that like you need to see the different types of water at the store, you know, like so like just drinking water then?
Yeah, like a drinking water, like a distilled water or something like that.
That's why people's coffee makers get all gunked up too,
exactly.
right?
Like yeah.
that's a good tip that you should use different water.
Yeah. So if you do like invest in your kitchen with a nice coffee brewer, like a Breville or something that's a little bit up there, like a $500 above coffee brewer, invest in at least a one can filter system.
Okay.
You know, just something that's going to take that hard water down a little bit because you're going to be throwing your money away.
And how do you clean that? Let's say you do get it gunked up a little bit, like you're saying. How do you clean that out?
Citric acid.
Okay.
That's going to take out those calcium deposits, which is going to gunk up all the moving parts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've used vinegar.
I'd
rather use citric acid, though.
Yeah,
that's
vinegar, it's going to be in there a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, that
yeah.
stuff. Citric acid really has no flavor. It's going to impart on...
Yeah.
The parts itself. So like a puro calf is one to use, right? And just work that through your, you know, make a pot of coffee, you know, with something, you know, and send that stuff through that are in the water or something. You can get little like cleaning pills, you know, that'll show you how to do it.
What's really interesting on that is like when you know, my wife cleans ours out with vinegar, I think, and before she cleans it out, it'll it's amazing how much more efficient the machine runs after
Absolutely.
The fact.
Right. Yeah.
You can tell when it needs to get cleaned out, like when it sounds like it's getting ready to take off.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, like she'll clean it out and she'll do like two cycles cleaning it out or whatever. And then it's unbelievable. Like that next morning when the coffee machine starts going, you don't even hear it because mm-hmm. it's just running so efficiently.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, the day before when it was gunked up, it's just like you hear every groan Struggling. And moan of that thing.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, so.
Yeah, that pressure's building up because it's hitting some resistance and it's like.
Yeah, yep. Interesting.
You may want to use some drinking water though, Eric. Yeah. Change the flavor of that cup
just
of coffee.
Just go to the Culligan and get those bottled waters and get yourself a flow jet coming off it. And there you go.
There you go. So getting back, I know we're jumping around here, but I just find the whole coffee process, you know, A to Z, start to finish, just fascinating. But, you know, whether you buy, you know, whole beans or ground coffee at the store, you know, it's kind of this finished product, yep. right? It definitely doesn't start off that way.
Not at all.
And so, like, we call it a bean, but explain, like, the coffee as it's grown. I mean, people call it, like, a cherry, I think.
Yeah, it actually, yeah, that's the fruit.
Or is it more of a pit than a...
It's a seed. Yeah, it's a seed. Pit. Yeah, I mean, the name bean has just been around forever, right? So it's just used. I sometimes will say seed to a customer, and they'll look at me with this, like, very glazed over funny look. Trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
So then I just revert back to saying bean, right?
Right.
Because I know it. But it's actually a seed, a pit of a coffee cherry, which is the fruit, right? So when a coffee plant, it blooms once a year, sometimes twice, mm-hmm. right? And it's force flowered by water.
Mm-hmm.
And once it's flowered, these little white flowers appear on the plant and then they sort of drop off, get pollinated. And then these little green cherries start to emerge and then they turn red or yellow or orange, depending on what it is, what strain it is. And then inside that cherry are usually two beans, right? Mm-hmm. Flat sides. If you can think of a coffee bean, the flat sides are together like that and it makes sort of an oval right inside. And sometimes there's what's called a pea berry, right? And a pea berry is inside that cherry, there's one seed, right? And it's a mutation within that plant that's going to produce that sort of one seed. And those are really coveted. They'll get sorted out by the pickers after, you know, it goes through its processes. And then those are bagged up on their own and sold off.
Is that more an aesthetic or is there a flavor?
Yeah. So think of if you think of like two coffee seeds, right? Getting all that energy from the plant and all that, you know, from flavor from the cherry and all that.
Okay.
With a pea berry, it's sort of one compacted into that, you know, all that compacted into that one pea berry or that one seed.
So
tends to be more flavorful, right? So the more sought after, like a Kenyan pea berry is a big one.
So is a pea berry.
Tanzania pea berries, a very sought after coffee, very expensive coffee sometimes.
So is the pea berry smaller than the sum of the two parts? Like, is it quite a bit smaller?
It can be, yes. The pea berries can range in screen size. Screen sizing is like the size of the seed itself. They can be very small or they can be somewhat large. Depending.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Every plant's going to produce pea berries.
Okay.
Just some will produce more.
Interesting.
How many cherries on average are like on a coffee?
On a coffee tree?
Yeah.
It depends on the production coffee plant itself. So it's going to vary from plant to plant and how they are taking care of the plant. So like every 2 years, are they cutting them back and letting them regrow, right? And then they're going to be stronger. They're going to produce more. But if they let it go, right, and it's just the same trees for 30 years, that production on those trees is going to start shrinking and shrinking and shrinking. So let's say it's a coffee plant that's at its maximum production.
Okay.
You know, you're going to get thousands.
Okay.
You know, of coffee cherries off that within its full cycle.
Okay.
Right? So it's full growing season from start to finish because they don't all kind of ripen at once, right? And they're all... You know, they'll go back through and harvest more and harvest more, unless they're mechanically harvested. But.
Okay.
So does a coffee tree need a lot from the kind of soil and the ecosystem? Because like a parallel I was thinking about in Wisconsin, like farmers will grow corn 1 year and then switch to beans because it takes a different thing out of the soil. So is there anything like that or is it just kind of...
No, coffee plants, there's a huge time investment in it, right? So a coffee plant won't even produce coffee in a harvestable amount for 3 years.
Oh, wow.
Right. So you have to plant that and it's going to take a long time. So it's not like something where they're going to switch crops or something or there's, you know, to regenerate whatever's in the soil. these plants are grown and then they're there for 30 years.
So it's an investment if you're trying to do a startup coffee farm. Like,
yeah, and that's why, you know, when you have...
The first 3 years might be a little rough.
Get some angel investors or something. You know?
You know, that's, yeah, for sure. Once you get it going, then you can start, you know, figuring out. But yeah, so that's why when there's things that happen, like a frost goes through Brazil and burns the trees, that's why the market just skyrockets or something.
So are they back to square one then?
It depends on what happens. So when I go to Brazil, I can still see some of the prior frost. So you look at the hills and there'll be like a little draw that comes down the mountain, and the way that coal there sits and collects and then turns into frost, it'll just be burned. You know, burn as in like brown.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
You know, you see these brown sort of strips coming down the mountain.
Jeez, that's wild.
Does that kill the actual plant or just the crop for that year?
Yeah, it can. Depends on if that plant's going to come back or not, depending how hard that frost was.
Okay.
If it's a day of frost, probably not that bad. If it's a week of frost or if it's prolonged frost, then...
Now, is the biggest risk there only frost during the growing season, or is it?
There's lots of it. There's Laroya. Laroya hit 2014, 15. There's still impacts from that.
Yeah.
Guatemala, all those, you know, Panama, all through there, Costa Rica. Laroya is a coffee rust. It's a fungal infection of the coffee, and it killed a lot of coffee plants, and it hurt a lot of farmers. So that's another one.
Yeah. Because I'm trying to draw parallels there to, like, apple trees. You know, like, at home, you know, in the Midwest, we, you know, if you have hard frost that comes in early May after your apples bloom, you know, it might zap it that year, and you'll have a year of really bad apple crop.
Right.
But then the very next year, if you've got better growing conditions, you're good to go. And it sounds like this isn't the case.
Yeah, well, yeah, not with Laroya.
Yeah.
Laroya's, yeah, they're bad. I mean, they call the, I think it's Costa Rica, it was, you know, it's pretty bad.
Is there a way to combat it, or it's just
they have to use fungicides and things.
Okay.
You know, which people look down on, but I see it as it's a means of like, okay, battle it, you know.
Right.
Right.
So.
How big, you know, we're talking about comparisons, like how big is a coffee tree? Like let's say a mature
coffee
tree.
It can be 3 foot or it can be 15 foot.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. It can go quite a bit. Shade grown coffee tends to grow taller.
Okay.
And what because is it's stretching for light always, you know, so it tends to get big because it's looking for that light.
And what's the life cycle of a coffee tree producing beans? Is it
like in its maximum production?
Yeah, in perpetuity?
It depends on if they're cutting them back every couple years, right? And they're really doing a good job at taking care of these plants and if they just let them go.
Yeah.
If they're really taking care of them, that, you know, they'll have to rip them out every 20, 30 years.
Really?
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Yeah, but if they're not taking care of them, they're just letting them kind of grow. So, their maximum production is just going to be down.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Are they a pretty quick growing tree then?
No, they're slow growing.
Really? Man, that's interesting. Because I'm like, you compare that to an oak. In an oak, you know,
it's not that slow.
Yeah.
No. No, in comparison to a hardwood or something, no.
Yeah. Okay.
These grow a lot faster.
Gotcha. Yeah, you're not necessarily comparing apples to apples there.
No.
Okay.
No. Yeah.
Interesting.
So and then harvesting these cherries, is it a consistent time of year for everybody? Is it like every spring, every summer, every fall?
No, go more north, you know, there's different harvest times, right? There's the bulk of the harvest that comes out, Colombia, Brazil, right? Mm-hmm. That's the bulk of the stuff that's going to come out. And that stuff will start happening in April, you know, into June, you know, we'll start getting most of it out of there. Colombia's got a double harvest. They'll have two harvest seasons just because of the climate in there and, you know, where they're at.
Okay.
But it's mainly, like I said, forced by the rainy season. The plants have water now, so once they have water, then they're going to start producing their fruit.
Okay.
So once the harvest happens, right, and, you know, that can, like I said, change from East Africa or, you know, even the Asian countries that are producing coffee, that can all be different. But for the main coffee, it's like in that April. You know, it's through into September kind of thing. But, so once that coffee gets harvested, and it's, you know, whether it's mechanical harvesting goes through, and they use big tractors similar to, like a car wash almost.
Yeah,
so, you know, I got to drive one time. It was kind of fun.
Heck, yeah.
But what it is, it's this giant tractor kind of on stilts, right? And there's four posts, and there's wheels at the four posts on the bottom. And then they drive the row of coffee through the center of the machine. In the middle of the machine, there's, like, two giant tall bristles even like in a car wash they would spin, and what that does is it like knocks all the cherries off the plants, kind of strips the branches.
Yeah.
Right. And they all kind of go one direction and just like sloughs all the cherries off, and yeah. they're collected at the bottom into an auger, and the auger puts it into a trailing cart. So if it's like that, then they go in once, right?
Okay, because
they're
right.
taking good, bad, whatever. Right. Typically, if you're going to see mechanically harvested coffee, that's going to be your lower grade specialty, your
macro.
Yeah, your commodity coffees right. harvested that way yeah. a lot, right? So they just want a ton of coffee.
Yeah.
They're trying to harvest tonnage.
Okay.
So if it's selected harvest, you know, they'll go in, take all the ripe cherries, come back in 10 days later, take the next round, the next round, the next round, until there's not really enough more, you know, enough there to,
yeah.
you know, make it worthwhile to go and get them. And then those hit the ground.
But interesting.
When you're doing the more, or when somebody's doing the more mechanized harvest, you know, like you said, you're getting cherries of, I guess, varying ripeness, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Are all those, is it just like a mixed bag going into that end product then?
Okay. Yeah. Sometimes it'll be sorted after the fact, right?
Okay.
So some of these co-ops, especially in Brazil, they're big down there, big co-ops. They'll have magic eye machines or they'll sort them out at the mill. You know, they'll set them into the water. Floaters go, sinkers stay. Cherry, you know, if it floats, it's got gas in it. If it mm-hmm. sinks, there's no gas, which means there's no rotting going on, no decomposition going on.
Okay.
So they can get sorted that way. But a lot of times with mechanically harvested coffee, it's just commodity coffee. So
okay.
it's that stuff you see at the store that's $6 a bag, mm-hmm. Stuff
gotcha.
Like that, pre-ground, $6 coffee. That's what that is. And there's companies that want tonnage. You know,
right.
I need, you know, 1.5 million pounds of that coffee.
Yeah.
No one's going to sort that.
What the heck's a magic eye?
A magic eye is it sends all the finished green coffee.
Am I the only one in the room?
The magic eye is it's a crazy machine, and every time I see it or go stand up there and look at it, it always boggles my mind. But what it is it's a machine. So you have the cured coffee seeds, beans, right, green,
mm-hmm.
And they're in a hopper, and then it feeds that hopper feeds down through a machine that has these little channels through the machine, right? And there's hundreds of thousands of these little channels, mm-hmm. and at every little channel there's an inspection eye, like a sensor.
Oh my gosh.
And what happens is if it sees a color it doesn't like or something, by the it senses it here, and by the time it knows the speed at which that coffee seed or that bean is dropping,
yeah,
and it knows that once it gets to right here, it's gonna, you know, it's gonna like hit it with a little blast of air, so it just kicks it out. So it's like it's just this. It's faster than you can even blink. All you see
that's
is
wild.
Beans flying everywhere as this coffee's coming down, and that's how they're sorting.
Yeah.
So they're getting rid of all the sours, all the, you know, the darker ones, and underripes, overripes.
Okay, interesting.
You know, broke a damaged coffee, things like that.
Has technology gone too far?
Not with coffee. Not with those things.
Yeah.
We're all benefiting. That's
yeah.
That's one where I'm okay with
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
I don't think that thing's really taken anybody's job.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Not a job anyone would want.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
I used to do it with a loop, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. A straw.
So, and then they dry it, or are they removing a husk, or what would you call the...
So, from the plant, it gets harvested, right?
Mm-hmm.
The cherries get harvested, the pickers put them into the pails, and the harvesters are paid by the pail, right? They're volumetrically paid.
Okay.
So, they go up, once they have their full sacks or whatever, then they go up, and they're leveled off, and they're paid by how much they're harvested. Then that coffee goes to the mill,
mm-hmm.
right? Or it goes to the patio. Most of the time, it'll go to the patio for a little while, but if it goes straight to the patio to dry, that's called a natural process.
Okay.
Right? So they're drying that with the coffee
cherry.
I think
I've seen pictures of that where it's just kind
cherries.
Of like, yeah, spread
yeah.
out,
yeah.
like almost on the ground. Just yeah,
it is on the ground.
Dry.
Yeah, it's just sun-dried, sun-cured. Yeah. So that's one process, right? So and from there, it'll go to get hulled, right, and husked. So what it does is it goes into a machine, and at the top of the machine has these little like hammers like this, and they're really fast, and you set the tolerance to how big that cherry is for the day or
mm-hmm.
for whatever's coming off your plants, and it's just going to break that open, right? And then it'll, down at the bottom, it'll kind of get hulled off, mm-hmm. and then you have your seed, your bean.
Can those husks be used as compost? Do they mm-hmm. reuse
They go
them?
Back
okay.
out, yeah.
That's
and
cool.
then the cherry itself's now getting sold at Cascara.
Yeah.
Cascara tea, they're reusing it as that now.
Yeah.
This is a big thing, or maybe it's not as big as it was when it first hit the market. But
okay,
yeah, if you wanted like caffeine, you know.
I had one question actually regarding the tree, are there birds or wildlife that eat coffee?
Yeah, like, oh, yeah.
Is that an issue mm-hmm. for growers?
Nah, not really.
Just because of the scale?
Yeah, no, they're not out there like shooting the birds and putting scarecrows out or anything.
Yeah. I swear I read an article.
Were you looking for another hunt opportunity, Sawyer?
Uh-huh. Hey, if they need some help. I was reading an article about a certain type of coffee. It was like hundreds of dollars an ounce. About it was this animal that eats a coffee bean.
It's a civet.
Yes.
Cat.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you know about? Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I won't drink it. Yeah, I've never drinked it, I won't drink it. One, it's extremely inhumane to those animals. They keep them in cages and mm-hmm. just feed them coffee by the bucket all day long. And they're in a cage that's open, you know, that's wire. Yeah. And then at the bottom, they collect the excrement and then they wash it, roast it, and you drink it.
I did see this article.
Right? It's cat poop.
Yeah.
Like, you can't, I don't care how you're going to sell that to me.
Right.
I'm not drinking that. You know what I mean? That's just
and
not
they put
something.
A premium price on that.
It's premium price because how much can that yeah. cat. You know what I mean? Yeah. How much can it eat in a day and expel in a day, right? Jeez. So it's not like they can make this on a mass
civet cat
scale. Yeah. It's called Kapi Luwak coffee.
We don't have to get into it. I was just wondering because I remember reading about that and thinking, wow. Yeah.
And I'd heard about it. I didn't realize the process was
feeding it and collecting
yeah,
it.
Like yeah. I thought it was you just, you know, go to this area and collect these wild.
I think at one point this maybe it was like matter. That. There was you know, like maybe some collection and harvesting of wild piles.
Okay,
right. But now it's not. I mean, it's an economy.
You know you need to get on the podcast after the follow up this coffee one. The first guy who ate cat poop coffee.
Right.
He's like, you know what? I'm gonna get some hot water. Yeah. I'm gonna clean off that poop and I'm gonna drink that.
I've never seen cat poop and gone, I've got an idea.
Right.
What yeah, a crazy.
He was either like really hungry or something.
Yeah.
You know?
Hey, it worked for him.
Desperate yeah. times, man. Now he's a millionaire.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like, I got all these cats running around, I gotta do something with this.
Yeah.
All this poop around.
Yeah.
You wanna buy it?
Yeah.
Anyway, I didn't want to sidetrack him, but no, I did want to take small detour to cat poop coffee.
No, so I like
that
subject. That
box. Yep. I think we're good.
Yeah, I like that subject because then I can really just shit on it.
Yeah, no pun intended.
Yeah.
Hey, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, where were we?
Coffee production.
Yes.
So there's natural process, right? That's one style, and that's going to lend its like the flavor to more fruity coffee, right? Okay. So you get that like cherry note, that blueberry
yeah.
in a coffee that's really strong and forward. Typically, it's going to be a natural process coffee,
yeah.
right? Because that is juices of that coffee cherry and the mucilage and everything, you know, from that are still on that seed, right? They're not washed off.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. So you're going to get that in the cup. So yeah. like we'll use some of those natural coffees in our blends just to give it that sort of little fruit note
right.
to it, right?
So on that note, how does the flavor of coffee change at like with temperature? So we have a friend that we work with that brews coffee, and there's one specific brew that he does that he recommends when you pour it to let it cool off because then more of the notes come out of that.
I do that with every coffee.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Don't let it get too cold, but yeah, you're going to want, you know, you're going to want it to be in that like kind of 140 range.
Yeah.
Temperature wise, and what it does is one, it's not burning your taste buds,
right,
and two, it's calmed down enough to where that you're not just noticing the heat and swallowing it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like those things are like kind of coming forward, all the different flavor notes. So, like when we grade coffee and cup coffees, what we're doing when we're grading those is, you know, one, we're gonna drink them at their optimal temperature, right? We're gonna get a little spoon, yep. we're slurping and. You know, maybe you guys are familiar with that process.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask about was like that cupping process. Mm-hmm. Cause I mean, that seems like almost like a pretty crazy skill that a person
has. It
is.
Has. Yeah. Yeah. It really takes years to really hone that skill and to know what you're tasting, and especially with defects, like to be able to taste that defect. And if it's super phenolic yeah. or something, you know, or that broke a damage, you can start really tasting the broken. But what it is, the process is, it's very simple really. Right. So you have a series of sort of porcelain cups, like small, like almost like a soup bowl you would get at a restaurant.
Oh, can I ask a question then?
Uh-huh.
Is porcelain like the optimal thing to drink a cup of coffee out of then?
No.
Or does it matter?
No, it doesn't matter. Just something that's not going to impart any like flavors, right?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Like we use silver spoons because silver doesn't have a metal flavor.
Okay.
Right? Mm-hmm. so it doesn't, you're not like a tin or something like that. You know, you can use stainless steel, but we like to use silver spoons.
Yeah.
But we just use them, one, for their insulation properties, so they're going to insulate the coffee a little bit. You know, and it's not going to go cold super quick. Like if it was in glass,
right?
Glass, it would just go cold.
Gotcha.
Right? So they kind of insulate a little bit. But in terms of like perfect thing to drink out of, there's a lot.
Okay.
You know, but so you have a series of cups, right? And what you're doing is you're adding ground coffee into these cups, and then you're adding water into the cups, right? And then they're going to do what's called blooming, right? So within roasted coffee, there's trapped gases,
okay,
right, from the roasting process. And what happens when you're adding water to those, that coffee opens up and releases that gas, and then it does what's called a bloom. You guys are probably familiar with that. So we're going to let that coffee bloom, and then it's called, then it has what's called, what we call a crust, right? There's a crust on top. Then what we're going to do is we're going to take, we're going to smell the coffee. So what we're going to do is we're going to take our spoon and we're going to break that crust with our noses really close to the crust.
Okay.
So we're like unlocking what's underneath. And we're smelling that, right? We're using our olfactory sense to like smell what's in there. We're smelling for any defects or, you know, anything that we might taste later on in the coffee. Because sometimes we can smell it and then really we'll kick it away, you know, automatically. If we smell something that's really off, we'll just know that coffee's not going to taste
so
great.
Is that blooming what almost looks like an oil slick on like the top of your glass, or is that something
No,
else?
It looks like a rising of a dough.
I know what you're talking about there, though. Like every now and then when you pour a cup of coffee, you get that weird little like an oil slick.
There's just oils in it, right?
Yeah, there's oils in it. If you're getting a ton of oil in your coffee, that means you're over-extracting it. Like if it's, you can visually see like droplets almost. Yeah, it's
so
over-extraction.
Over-extracting is in like you're putting too much
coffee. You're pushing too much out of that coffee. Whether, you know, if you have espresso and you see oil build up in espresso, that's gonna probably gonna be those bitter.
So remedy that by putting less coffee in.
Less coffee, less temperature, less pressure. Like if you're tamping way too hard, your coarseness of your coffee is probably too fine.
Yep.
And it's not letting the right amount of water go through, right?
Yeah.
Extraction times.
That's another really good tip.
I was
really
just,
good tip.
Mm-hmm.
I was just gonna ask that. Like so two things there. One, the how coarse do you want to grind it if you're actually grinding it yourself?
Depends on what brewing apparatus you're using.
Yeah.
So if you're doing like a French press, you want like 1500 particulates per bean, right? And you're probably not gonna get a microscope out and count.
Yeah.
Right. How many pieces come off that bean. But you know, you want it similar to like coarse salt.
Okay.
Right?
Yep.
Somewhere where those particulates can't fit together.
Yeah.
Okay, right.
So closely that it's going to block.
Like almost clump.
Yeah.
Like
or like if you're using a French press, if they're too close together, they won't let you push down the plunger, right? Then you'll have to pull up the plunger a little bit, twist, and push down. Pull, twist, push down.
Yeah.
Pull, twist, push down. So you can get it all the way to the bottom.
Yeah.
It's usually when you have that, it's too fine.
But you kind of want to maintain almost like a semi-porous.
Yeah. You don't want them to fill your screen,
right?
To be small enough to fill the screen.
Right.
You want them to be just big enough so they're just bigger than the holes in the screen.
Yeah.
So that, you know, you can plunge it.
And then what's the best ratio of water to coffee?
Man, that's a subject all in itself.
Yeah.
Because it depends on the coffee, right, that you're using.
Yeah.
That's going to say how much, you know, coffee that you're gonna put in with the water.
Right.
You know, typically what I do for 8 ounces of coffee is about 12 to 13 grams.
Okay.
To 8 to 10 ounces. So
okay.
If you use that as a starting point.
Yeah.
You know, and it's hard to say which, like if it's a super dark coffee, and you try to, you know, relate that to measuring in spoons.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard because a lighter coffee is going to be less coffee, right? But it's going to weigh more than a dark coffee. It's going to be visually more coffee and weigh less. So,
okay,
you know, it's hard to say in terms of like how many scoops from a spoon it's going to take. But in gram weights, that's usually what I recommend.
Okay.
Okay. So cool. Do you have like a scale then that you use?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have a scale when we're brewing coffee. So just like that, like I touched on that third wave stuff, you're controlling every variable that goes into making that cup of coffee. Because if there's something wrong, you can figure out where it's wrong and you can fix it.
Okay.
Yeah, that's why like the main drawback on auto brewers and things is like you can't do that.
Right.
You
can't pull out the
You can't
individual.
Pull out what's going on. Usually it's too hot of water, right? It's sort of more percolating than actually showering and things like that. But
so is there an official process or like community for kind of the things that you're talking about? Like you think about like a sommelier for wine.
Mm-hmm.
Like is there kind of that ingrained community where there are certain like norms you have to check off these boxes to be considered like a coffee expert, or is it more?
I mean, you can, like, when I first started, there wasn't, right? There wasn't any classes you could take.
Right.
You couldn't go learn to be a roaster unless somebody taught you, or like in my case, you just bite the bullet and buy your equipment and mm-hmm. spend the year learning how to do yeah. it without letting anybody drink your coffee, you know? But now you can go to cupping classes, you can get these certifications, but really it takes just time. Mm-hmm. You know, once you get to that level of like director of coffee in your career in coffee, you've pretty much there.
Director of coffee. Yeah. That is a title that I would aspire for.
Change,
I had that.
Change my business cards apparently.
Yeah. I had that title for 11 years.
Dude, that's amazing.
Wow. Yeah.
That's 11 cool.
years. Another company, but.
Let's jump back because I want to finish this cupping process.
Yeah.
So you've broken the crust.
Mm-hmm.
You've used your olfactory senses yep. to like, you know, smell what
uh-huh.
either what's you think going should on be in there or yeah. not be there.
Yeah.
And then what's going on
so
after
now,
that?
So now you're going to get rid of the coffee grounds for the most part that's in the, okay. in the cups, right? So you're going to take 2 spoons and you're going to put them sort of together and then you're going to run them around the side of the cup and start pulling out all the grounds, right? Get all the grounds mm-hmm. out of there. So when you're slurping that coffee, you're not slurping these pieces of grounds at the back of your throat.
Okay, right. Because it's right? like kind of like when I've seen it on video, it's like kind of like a rapid. Like,
yeah, you're
really
slurping
going
it,
for it.
Yeah. So the reason why you're doing that is because you want to smell and taste at the same time. So okay. when you slurp, you're aerating that coffee in your mouth.
Yeah.
Right. And then now you can really taste. You can really taste that coffee.
Yeah.
Right? So all those flavors are really sort of magnified when you do that.
Gotcha. Okay.
And then is there any process for transitioning from one to the next one to the next one? Or is it
no, there is
like just
yeah,
its
there
own
is.
New experience?
Yeah.
Like, or so, could one like almost like tamper with the next one?
Yeah. So what you do is you're gonna wash your spoons off. So you have, you know, they're you go down the line, right? And you only really do that when you have different coffees, right? Or like different lots. Like
okay.
say these two cups right here, this is one lot of coffee. And then, you know, especially if you're like if you're at a co-op
okay.
right, and you're going through lots of coffee. So lots meaning like different batches of mm-hmm. green coffee, I would say,
okay.
or like different farms.
Okay.
And you're cupping them against each other.
Okay.
Right. So you want to find the best one. You'll have a couple, you know, like this, these two cups here, you always want to have two basically. So you can try to see if they're consistent.
Mm-hmm.
So you have two here, two here, two here, two here. Then you have a glass of clean water. So you'll go through one, dip it, get all the coffee from the last one off, go into the next one and
okay.
so on and so on and so on. And then there's a round table and you just keep going around and around and around the table as you're tasting these coffees and you've got your
yeah.
note, you know, your notepad and you're sort of scoring these coffees as you go by and which ones you want to take a second look at and, you know, so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And you're drinking these coffees or grading these coffees until they get cold. So you want to mm-hmm. drink them from their optimal temperature all the way down to cold pretty much. And
oh, wow.
see how that temperature change or how the flavor changes, because as a lot of times with lower grade coffees, as they get cold, they start to get extremely undrinkable.
Right.
Right. So a really high grade coffee, a really nice coffee is going to be really good when it's hot and it's going to mm-hmm. be good when it's cold.
Hmm.
A lot of lower grade coffees will, you know,
get bitter.
They'll get bitter or they'll get funky.
Yeah.
You'll start to taste that. Those off flavors and those yeah. funky flavors in the coffee as it gets cold.
Is there mm. something about a good blend that makes it better when it's cold? Is it just the quality of the
quality
bean
of coffee? It's a good in, good out situation.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting because, I mean, I generally, you know, drink good coffee, mm-hmm. like Dark Timber, and, like, oftentimes, like, I don't mind, like, let's say I pour a cup and I go do something, whatever, get distracted by the kids, I'll come back to it and I'll drink it cold
yeah.
and it's a completely enjoyable
yeah,
experience.
Yeah, still good, right? Yeah, that means you're drinking a good
yeah.
coffee.
Interesting. Yeah. What about reheating it? You know, like...
that question's better for my mom than me.
yeah. yeah.
She's the queen of reheating coffee in the microwave.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
But, yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
Because I can't
well,
imagine
let's
that.
Let's address it.
Yeah.
Let's address
mom,
it.
Mom, if you're out there. Yeah. it's not going to be as good as when it was first
yeah,
hot.
Yeah. yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
So you would recommend if it's good coffee, just drinking it cold rather than
drink
reheating it out.
Make
of
just
it.
Enough to drink it. Yeah. To drink, yeah. just like drink that much. I mean, like don't make a full pot and then like go out back and microwave it, but to each their own, right?
Yeah,
I'm not going to tell
yeah.
you not to do it. You know, mm-hmm. coffee's coffee. You got to
yeah.
drink coffee.
Cause I noticed that like when we brew up like a full pot and like, you know, maybe we drink
two cups right off the bat. Then we go, you know, whatever, take the dog for a walk, come back 45 minutes later, we still got that pot on. Now we drink, or we pour another cup, totally different, you know, because mm-hmm. it's been sitting on there so long and it's yep. gotten so hot and it's probably burned.
Oh, yeah. They're like so, diner coffee. We used to call yeah. like diner style
yes,
coffee.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, that's
exactly.
Where you have like, you know, the just one brewer, but yep. then there's like nine burners attached to it. Yep. So there's like nine pots of coffee, you know, so like each server can come up and grab one.
Right.
Yeah, it's that.
Gotcha.
Yeah, kind of burned.
Yeah, you get it. Mm-hmm. You know, you have, you're like, oh, I can taste the nostalgia.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You got to be in a tough spot to drink that coffee. Like, you really need it. You're, yeah. You're not in a you're good place.
You're out late
when you're,
the night before, yeah. and you're at that diner in the morning, yep. getting that greasy spoon food.
Yep, yep. Do we dig in?
I don't think it's a bad idea.
Yeah.
So as we're doing this, so we're talking about, you know, I feel like we've kind of gotten there. So it's like, so making up a coffee, cup of coffee, we're talking about the water, the temperature, the coarseness of the grounds, and then I guess, you know, the process that you're going to brew that coffee. And I know when we're at the BHA rendezvous a couple years ago, you had this like Rube Goldberg contraption yeah. to brew coffee. I think yeah. you called it like a vacuum.
Yeah,
a
siphon pot.
A siphon pot.
Yeah, it's a beam heater siphon pot.
Okay. Yeah. That seemed like pro,
that's my
pro level.
That's probably like my
director
favorite
of coffee
cup of coffee is through that siphon pot.
And is that something where you're like, I've got the time?
Yeah. That is a time investment and it's very little output, right? It's pretty much like a European, South American sized cup of coffee. It's very small.
Okay.
6 ounces.
And what's happening in that process then?
Yeah, so it's a really cool way to make coffee, right? So it's what it is. I'm going to try to explain this so people can visually see this in their heads. But on the bottom, there's a round bulb, right, which mm-hmm. is full of water, about halfway. And then on top, if you can think of how a French press looks,
mm-hmm.
right, and sort of a cylinder. And at the bottom of the cylinder is a stem, right, like a tube, right? And then that top and tube go down into the water in the bulb, right? There's a rubber gasket right at the tube, and it makes a seal. And then that whole contraption has a handle and a foot base to it, and you slide that thing over a beam heater.
Mm-hmm.
You can use fire, which is the old way to do it.
Okay.
Like a kerosene lamp kind of thing. But I have these, or we have these very expensive beam heaters from Japan. And it's more of a consistent, rapid heat. And you're heating up the water in that bulb, right? And when you heat water up, it creates vapor. Vapor creates pressure, right? And there's nowhere for that pressure to go but push down.
Mm-hmm.
And then it pushes the water up the stem and up into the mm-hmm. top carafe, right? And then at the bottom, there's the pressure is so high that no more water's left down there. It's all pushed up to the top. And then from there, you're going to turn down the heat just a little bit, just enough to keep that pressure there so it's not rolling anymore. Then you're going to add your coffee. You're going to stir. And then it's just like a French press. It's full immersion. That coffee is going to be extracted 3.5 minutes, right around there. And then you're going to take the heat away, right? You're going to take it off the heat. And then at the base of that carafe, there's a filter. And then now all that coffee is getting, you know, the pressure at the bottom, you know, becomes negative pressure, creates suction, right? So now it's collapsed on itself, and now it's wanting to pull everything from the top down, right? And it's going to suck all that or pull all that coffee through that filter and then down into the bottom. And at the top, you know, it's caught all the ground, so mm-hmm. you're going to take that top piece off. And then now the bottom bowl becomes a decanter, and then you're going to decant the coffee that came through the filter into your cup.
Hmm. Sounds really fun to wash.
It's a process, yeah. I mean, it really is. It's probably the coolest way to make coffee
yeah.
in my book.
I was visualizing it, and it sounds yeah. incredible.
I mean, I was fascinated by it as I watched it happen. Like, maybe not, you know, the process you're going to take on when you're trying to get the kids out the door to school in the morning, but, you know, on a Saturday when you're 5 years old, mm-hmm. reading the New York Times,
right.
Sawyer, maybe.
The siphon going next to you.
I feel like that's the number one, but like, you know, I know myself, probably a lot of folks, like you want to make a pot of coffee in the morning. You're going to be drinking multiple cups of coffee. Mm-hmm. You might have multiple
pots.
People, yeah. you know, so it's like, you know,
yeah,
however many
volume
people.
Thing.
So like,
yeah.
what's the best volume process where you're going to be able to, you know, accommodate maybe, you know, multiple people,
auto,
but still
auto drip. That's going to be your main, you know, you're going to get 12 cups out of that.
Yep.
Right. There really isn't, like, in terms of a pour over style, like a Chemex or something, they're not going to be at that volume. You know, you might get 2-3 cups out of it.
Would you go over that even like over like a larger press too then?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, well, I mean, with auto brewers, like it's a nice, like, you know, if you get a nice brewer, you're going to get a nicer cup of coffee, okay, right? If you go with a cheaper Mr. Coffee or something, it's probably not going to be that great.
Yeah.
Right. So I would, like in our kitchen, we have Breville's.
That's, okay.
But Breville's a brand for a brewer.
Yep.
They're nicer.
We have two, actually.
Yeah. They're nicer and they use a lot of commercial parts, like from, like taken from like a Fetco or something, like a commercial brewer. So the platform in which these things brew coffee is very similar to a commercial machine, right? So you're going to get that nicer cup of coffee, right, with them. And then it kind of goes downhill. There's other brands you can get to that'll be nicer, but those are the ones that I use.
Okay. Cool.
For an auto.
Yeah.
But beyond that, I would probably do a Chemex or something.
Note to self, get rid of my Mr. Coffee.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying like, get rid of
that's
it.
That's what I have too, actually.
I'll have to check.
Yeah, yeah,
I'm getting made fun of for reading the New York Times.
Meanwhile, Mark's pinky is
Mr. Rockefeller.
Yeah,
Mr. Rockefeller over here.
I enjoy it. It was a gift. It was a gift from my father.
Yeah.
If you want to make fun of that, Eric.
A good coffee brewer is definitely a good investment.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Well, speaking of Mr. Coffee, Eric, so we got, and I can't believe I interrupted this process, like self-sabotage, for goodness sakes. Yeah. I don't know, what is it, like 10 a.m.? We haven't had a cup of coffee
I'm
yet.
I'm sitting here about to die.
I'm hoping this water is like still at optimal brewing temperature.
Well, I know.
Okay, step one.
So
let's run
so
through
this is,
the
this
gamut
is a dark
here.
Timber gravity pack, so this is what you,
super
you
light.
Know, take. You know, heck, you can make a cup of coffee at your desk at work.
So these are, the Gravity Pack is a single serve pour over style coffee pack. So if you want to go hunting, car camping, you know, you're in the backcountry, you're hiking, whatever, you can take one of these with you and you can actually get a drip coffee, a cup of drip coffee on the mountain without bringing in a Ziploc baggie full of grounds.
Yep.
And then, you know, that really smelly coffee brew sock thing that people bring, you know, that they never wash.
Sure.
And then, or like a collapsible cone.
Well, yeah, or even, and I'm just kind of looking at the concept here, you know, cleanup, right?
Super easy. They're biodegradable.
I was just going to ask that.
So you just bury them like your teepee or whatever, or if you got a fire going, just throw it in the fire.
Okay.
Oh, whoa, yeah. This
is, it smells amazing.
That's the stuff.
Yeah, it smells pretty good, right? I think these came off the line Sunday. So these these are roasted on Sunday.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, it's Friday.
You know what?
Don't know.
And so, like, I don't want to halt this process. Let's we're doing
He's
this.
Gonna halt the process.
I know, but I want to talk about time because you talk about time. Like, you know, once you roast a bean, right? So a green coffee bean that's just been essentially, I guess, dried, right?
Cured. Yeah, you want to get it down to 13% water content for its curing process. Yeah.
But that'll stay stable for how long?
That's a tough question.
Okay,
right? So stable is. Meaning it's not molded or gone bad.
Like not molded, gone bad, still good for roasting. You're going to get the product that you want out of it.
You can roast coffees up to a couple of years, right? Well, but we don't.
Okay.
Yeah. So we'll use coffees that are fresh crop always, right? Okay. And they come in Grain Pro bags.
Yep.
So they have these high barrier bags that they're shipping coffee in. So basically a year is what we want to use. Like when we're buying coffees, we're buying a year's worth.
Okay.
Right? And then that's it. And then once we're getting to the tail end of those lots that we're buying, then we're going to... We're already working on the next slot that's coming in.
Gotcha.
Right. So we're not buying coffees that are a year out and then forecasting our usage of those coffees through the year.
Right.
But coffee can and does get sold as aged Sumatra or something for up to 5 years.
Okay.
Yeah, or 10 years, some of this stuff.
But then once you roast that coffee.
Then that's when the clock really starts ticking.
Okay.
Right. Roasted coffee should, I mean, I always tell people to buy as much coffee as you're going to drink. Maximum for a month.
Okay.
Right? Don't buy 2, 3, 4 months at a time.
Costco. Get the...
Yeah. And the stuff that's...
the
at
drum.
Yeah. And I don't want to badmouth that stuff, but a lot of that stuff's been sitting before it even goes there.
Yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah.
Right? So, you know, we used to sell, or I used to sell back in the day to a grocery, you know, with my last company. And I know exactly how long that coffee that actually finally gets to the supermarket, how old that coffee actually is before. You know,
right
before it gets there.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, but coffee, you know, like I like to drink coffees that are 2 weeks old, you know, maximum, you know, get it around there.
Well, this is
Let's get this party started.
We're aging this by the minute.
We're losing time.
So the gravity pack, what you're going to do is you're going to take it out of the package, and it's a filter system, so you're going to tear open the top and just get a perforated tear there.
Step one.
And then there's these little, I like to call them cardboard, but they're really not. They're like a hard paper, like a really thick paper. Little arms that come off the side. So you're going to pull those out. You don't have to bend them forward, but I like to bend them forward because then it creates that little lip on the side that grabs the cup a little better. And you're just going to pull them over and place them over your cup, just like that.
Easy, Mark.
I know. Easy, easy success.
Just like that, okay? And then we have this container of water here. Let me open it up. Hopefully there's still steam coming out of there.
I should just film this.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right. And I'm going to let one of you guys do the honors because I've made thousands of these. So maybe the guy more farthest away from the equipment.
I was going to say, you guys, we already went over my operating of the electronics, so probably shouldn't pour water all over it.
Okay. And you're just going to pour enough water in there to let it bloom. So we're actually going to see the bloom happen. So you can see how it swelled up and all those bubbles.
Okay.
Keep going. And just kind of let it fill up. And you can see why we call them gravity packs. You know, gravity's pulling that water through the coffee and through the filter.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's kind of like a slightly slower, like, you know, you just kind of got to give it its time to fill up. And
yeah, because it's a small system, right? So you can't add a ton of water there. So
right.
The in and out, the water going in, the water coming out, the coffee coming out, it's fairly rapid because it's a smaller system. But it's quicker than a regular drip machine.
You know? Right. Yeah.
Or even a regular pour over.
Sure.
Yeah, it's quicker.
And when you're watching, like, it's almost like, are we watching that bloom take place?
Yeah,
like,
you're
multiple
seeing
times
that
then?
All that on top there. It doesn't hang around as long because it's a smaller brewing system, so it's gonna leave there pretty quick. But you're actually seeing a lot of that bloom there.
I have a couple quick questions while we wait for this, because, like, in listening to you talk, I can tell you're incredibly passionate about coffee.
Yeah.
And I just want to get as many of the tips for people listening out of you as we can. One question typically you get at a, I guess, nicer coffee shop is natural versus washed.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about that difference?
Yeah, that was the part of the process. The natural process, right? It's a good question. Yeah, because I wanted to touch back on that. So you have natural processed coffees, right, which are dried with the cherry on in the sun.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
You have a pulp natural coffee, right, which the cherries go to the mill and they're pulped, meaning that they squeeze that seed out that still has the juice on there and the husk on there and the silver skin, you know, the parchment. And then that goes out to the patio to be dried without washing it.
Okay.
Right? So that will still have a fruit note to it or a fruit flavor to it, but it's not going to be as pungent or as forward as a natural will be. It'll also be more consistent in terms of the bean itself, right? In terms of roasting, it'll roast a little more consistent than a natural will.
Okay.
Right? Because the curing is a little bit not as consistent as with a natural, like a pulp natural. And then you have a washed, right, where they go and they'll pulp the coffee, right? They'll pulp it out of the cherry and out of the mucilage, and it'll go into a trough, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in the trough, it'll go down these little channels, or sometimes they just have a tub, depending on how the mill is. And they're raking it and agitating it and washing that coffee, and they're washing all that off. And then that coffee is going to be more delicate. It's not going to have that blueberry. It's not going to have that cherry note, strawberry, things like that you'll get in the coffee. Typically, you'll have more of a lemon, more of a floral, things like that.
Okay.
Or if it's like a heavy chocolate or something with a washed coffee.
So it's really a taste preference thing.
Yeah, and like a lot of our blends are very heavy on the washed, right? Because we want something, one that's going to score really high. Right, it's more of complex in terms of its flavor, and one that's going to roast well. Right,
okay.
So that typically we won't go over 10% in a natural in any blend.
Okay,
because I think it's a little bit of your brain tricking you. Because the first time I heard that, I was like, "Well, natural sounds like it's
like
natural.
It's somehow
they
should be sold
sanitizing
at,
it. You know,
organic section of Whole Foods or something, right? Yeah, but it's just a process.
My other question is hearing you talk about some of the mechanisms you use, your favorite way to prepare coffee. It just seems like you like coffee in like its rawest form.
Yeah.
Like water coffee. How do you feel about kind of the influx of coffee and beer, coffee and cooking? Kind of some people use it on rubs for steaks.
Yeah, I like different different avenues people to drink or eat coffee. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I'm big proponent of that, like working it into like other things mm-hmm. in your culinary cookbook or repertoire, is use it as a rub or use it as a, some sort of marinade, you know, put it in that or in a beer.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
Also, we've done a lot of coffee ports, a lot of stouts,
mm-hmm.
Things like that. I'm not a huge proponent in flavored coffee.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
Yep.
Anytime you're a coffee company's putting flavorings in their coffee, those flavorings are just chemicals.
Right.
It's just a chemical.
Yeah.
And the way they do that is think of like a big cement mixer. So the coffee comes out of the roaster, they take it over, they throw it in a cement mixer, and they take buckets of flavoring and they just toss the buckets of flavoring in the mixer, and it just rolls it around,
yeah.
coats the coffee, and then they put it in a bag and send it out. And there's really no natural way to do that.
So if you want to flavor your coffee, the preferred way would be to do it after the fact.
Yeah,
like
or
use
a really nice syrup, like a basic nice sugar syrup would be like a Monin, you know, something like that. And there's a lot of other nicer ones from there. But really, you know, honey is a good one to put in there.
Oh,
sure. If you want to put sugar in there or whatever. And I'm not going to take any, you know, away from anybody if they want to put like a mm-hmm. flavoring in there. Do what you want. Mm-hmm. Drink how you want to drink your coffee, right? My nose is up in the air, but the chemicals that go into it, I'm not a fan of.
Man, there's just so much that goes into it, you know? I mean, it's like a staple. I mean, it's a staple of all of our everyday, you know? And I think in some ways you don't think about it. I mean, you think about it because you get up, you enjoy it, and it's part of your day. But like beyond that, you know, and just the different variables that go into it. And
it's something I'll invest into. Like good coffee for me used to be like a weekend thing. But it's really become something like I prioritize and invest in now. Like I want good coffee every day.
Yeah, life's too short, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah.
I'll still drink bad coffee every now and then.
Yeah.
Just to like keep myself in check.
Yeah.
Cleanse the palate.
It really is.
Reset.
Like reset, you know what's out there, and you're like, all right, I got it good over here.
Well,
because you'll take it for granted sometimes. Yeah. You drink coffee like that for years and years and years. I'll still go to the gas station.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then take a few sips and like, nope.
Yeah, well, the neat thing with, like, these gravity packs is you got something that you can bring into the field with you and, like, for your mood, you know, just, mm-hmm. like, that does wonders.
That's
you know?
My thing. Like, I can't do a pre-workout on the mountain. I can't do those type of things, but they're good for people, you know, like, mm-hmm. they help a lot of people.
Right.
I have to have coffee.
Yeah.
It's not so much the caffeine, it's what it does to my brain.
Yeah.
Right.
There's, like, a neural thing that's going on that, like, all of a sudden I'm looking through rose-colored glasses, you know what I mean? And, like, my day is just better.
Yeah.
It's a morale booster.
It really is.
Yeah.
Like, if you want to spend more time in the woods, or, you know, for guys that are deer hunting, more time in a tree stand, like, having something like this, super easy, you know, it's going to keep you in the field longer, and, you know, that'll make you more successful.
Absolutely.
Dopamine, man.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it makes the world go around.
I didn't want to. That's a dopamine dump.
We're not just talking about drugs.
Yeah.
Drink more coffee, shoot more bucks.
That's right. Yeah. No, you know, like my, you know, I do a lot of backcountry hunting is pretty much all we do. And, you know, I used to have a jet boat and now I have an MSR, but I set it right next to my pad and in my sleeping bag. And I won't leave that sleeping bag until that coffee is done. And I'm drinking it, and then
God,
like now I'm coming
amazing.
Out of my bag, and like now I'm getting everything ready. But like,
my
day up there does not start until that coffee's done.
There's something to be said about watching this process that's going on right in front of me right now in a tent out in the middle of the woods.
Well, then you unzip, walk right out into it with
exactly.
the
ready to go, right?
Yep.
Yeah, you're not standing around.
One more pour,
shivering,
and then it's
waiting
going
for
to
it to
you,
go.
Marco.
You know, you talk about, and at least for me, like it's not even necessarily like a morning thing. You know, I mean, it is a morning thing when I'm in the field, but man, like, you know,
a midday
break, or if you've been like glassing forever and it's like cold out and you're just like, let's make a cup of coffee.
And November mule deer.
Yeah.
And like, it's such a treat.
Yep.
And like you said, like maybe it's a dopamine bump too, or a morale booster, but like there is something about making coffee in the middle of nowhere when it's like frosty out that just feels
100%.
It's like
good.
That comfort from home and you've got it on the mountain and it's just like like you're not like powering through it just because you need it, you're like enjoying it.
Yeah, exactly.
It like it ranks right up there with some of my favorite memories from the trip.
That cooking, and then obviously like, you know, the hunt itself, but like that, that is part of the experience, no doubt.
Yeah, like when we're like, let's say mule deer hunting, we're doing a lot of sitting, right?
Right.
We've got them in our pack.
Yeah.
We'll just make them all day.
Yeah.
You know, if you have our vapor pack, which is our instant line, we have the Mount Baker Mocha version. Those are kind of nice too. If you're up there, you don't really need water. You can just pour it in your mouth and swish a little water around and you're done. But
so as someone who appreciates like a really good cup of coffee and you're super passionate about it, what did the process look like from working with the past company and like really liking really great coffee and wanting to share great coffee and putting that in a package and keeping the same quality to something that you can use in a tent?
It's hard. Yeah, to keep that along the same line going, right? Because one, it's pre-ground, right? So it's, you know, if you were going to be a real snob about coffee, you want to keep it as a whole bean,
okay?
Right? But with these things, you know, we do a small nitrogen injection, so we're going to get rid of the oxygen and put a little nitrogen in there, and then it's going to stop the decomposition process or the aging process of the coffee. So you're going to get a higher grade coffee. End product with them.
That's really what I was wondering. That is super interesting because I never would have thought something like, it's crazy.
Yeah. So if you take out the oxygen from the coffee, oxygen was what starts and what, you know, decomposes things, right? It's oxygen, basically. That's why things in space can be there forever.
Yeah.
Unchanged, I guess. But so if you take that out, then you're just stopping that process. And then once you open it up, though, then it's accelerated.
Go
right time. now it's oxygen starved.
Yeah,
right. And you better use it, or it's going to go not bad quickly, but it'll get back to where you want it fairly quick. So once you open that package in the mountain, you better be brewing it.
Yeah, yep.
I think I'm getting there. I think there's just enough water.
No. I've already had. I'll be all right.
You've had some of this before?
Yeah, I've had one or two of them.
All right.
Yeah, I'll leave them up to you guys. Don't worry about it.
You know what, though? Part of that was, like, it's the social part, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, I was like, I want to have a cup of coffee with you.
That's
right. Yeah, yeah.
So I guess what inspired you to kind of go on this path?
Good question.
Go on this path to kind of put this in a, package it, make it in a way that people can enjoy it out there.
Yeah, so, like, when I first started my very first company, I was 20, right? Saved up all my money, bought an espresso cart, found a location.
Yeah.
Then I opened up two more by the time I was 22 in downtown Seattle or whatever. And then, you know, went to help develop another bigger company. But it was always that cafe style, right? And it was always that sort of that third wave coffee shop stuff. But in my soul, I was always like, I want to create this another company that's going to be more true to what I'm doing, you know, what I like to do.
Right.
So I wanted to start the first ever kind of hunting coffee brand.
Yeah.
Right. And then within that brand, I was like, okay, so how am I going to get my product from us and get people to use it on the mountain? Right.
Right.
So how do I bridge that gap? Because not everybody just want to take a 12 ounce bag and stuff it in their pack and hit the mountain. Right. So then I started thinking of products that would help facilitate that and help ease the process of having good coffee on the mountain. So we started with the Ascent Pack, which is more of a full immersion style pack, similar to this. It just doesn't have the arms. You don't rip it open. You just kind of drop it in.
Yep.
Right. And it just leaches out. Mm-hmm. Similar to like how a French press works.
Yeah.
Right. And then we started looking at other ways to do it. How do we do like a drip coffee style, right? Start covering the bases. And how do we do like more of the instant stuff? And like the guys who want to just dump and stir, they want to go stoveless and they can just use cold water.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that. So that's kind of what spawned all these products. And we have a lot more products that are going to be coming out too that are really cool.
Oh, interesting.
Never been seen before. So.
And are you limited in the type of beans that you can use with the way that this is set up? Or is it, you can use anything you want?
Anything, yeah.
That's cool.
Our coffee's in it, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't add any more,
another brand
or anything.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm ready.
Okay. So just take them out. I guess you can set them on there or whatever.
Yeah.
I've never seen anybody like that.
Do you give this a...
That's the first time I've ever seen
That's the suitcase method.
I told you, dog. I don't play around when it comes to coffee.
I'm going to steal that, man. That's like little handles.
Yeah, that was seamless, right back into the bag.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just like a little carry bag.
Yeah, and we have like, so the filter system is biodegradable. You know, obviously the outside high barrier packages, but moving forward, we're actually moving into a full biodegradable packaging. So, you know, if there are litter bugs that buy our product, we'll do our part into making sure that that at some point is going away.
That's cool.
So the micro garbage and the micro trash is going to be going away from us.
Huh. Cool. Cool. That yeah. makes sense. Like, it didn't cross my mind that that would be a problem, but I guess I could see that potentially.
Yeah, most guys are good. Like, all the guys I hunt with, you know, yeah. all our trash goes right back in our pack, but I
yep.
I can't speak for everybody.
Right.
You know,
right.
so I'm going to try to do something that, you know.
And errant wind blows and,
yeah,
you know.
Exactly. Or, you know, like, you always see, like, other coffee companies' cups everywhere.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Everywhere. On the ground. Yep. You know, and I don't want people to be going somewhere and seeing our trash on the ground.
That's not the advertising you're looking for.
Yeah. No, it's not. Yeah.
What's the optimal in the field vessel for coffee, in your opinion?
Well, man, it's tough. You have the tin cups, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You got the little tin cups,
yep,
little titanium cups.
That's what I've
cups.
Always used.
The only problem with those is they get hot and they burn your lip.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay, right.
Yeah. So they have other smaller style cups that have like a neoprene around them or something. Typically, what we're doing is we're using our jet boils or our, you know, okay. our other brewing styles. You know, these will stretch over quite a bit.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
You know, but for the gravity packs, you know, we'll use little titanium cups. It's called a, what's the brand of
like
those?
Like the Snow Peak or
Snow
something?
Snow Peaks. Yeah, we use Snow Peaks.
Okay.
Yeah. And they do a pretty good job. Yeah. But our scent packs and our instant stuff, you can just use your jet boil or,
nice.
You know, that's for like most of the guys that buy those are the like ultralight guys who don't want to bring cups. They don't want to bring extra stuff. That's what they use because they'll just boil the water, let it come off the roll. And you know, it's right at about 200 degrees.
Right.
You know, it's dropping and then they're going to be brewing their coffee in it.
Okay. Awesome. Well, earlier, I don't know if we're recording yet or not, but we're talking about coffee and I've drank a lot of coffee in my life, and I've had drip coffee, press coffee, this coffee, and then Surd asked Tony, like, what, you know, and he's like, oh, I like a pour over. So this is, in fact,
this is pour over.
This is my first pour over.
Really?
Oh, nice.
All right. We did it. We're doing it, everybody.
Love
was
it.
Was this like a coffee intervention, getting you on the right path in life?
Mm-hmm. Here goes.
All right. Cheers, fellas.
All right.
Oh, man. Yep.
Good? Mm-hmm. Pass the test?
That's a good cup of coffee.
Oh,
and it's
man.
It's like a single serve, put it in your backpack coffee.
Yeah. That is awesome.
Man, I just like the option to have really nice things when you're out in the woods.
You buy nice gear, mm-hmm. you buy nice rifles, you buy nice optics, right? Vortex optics.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you.
You know? Why would you just bring in some junky coffee?
Especially if you really like coffee, why would you give that up?
It just always boggled, like, it blew my mind why guys would spend so much money on boots and gear and like all this stuff. Even their food, they're like researching food.
I was just gonna bring that up.
You know, like, this is food to me.
It absolutely.
You know what I mean? Guys are balking about, like, you know, other freeze dried brands, and it's like then they're pulling out, you know, some very bottom shelf brand of coffee on their hunt.
Yeah,
and
like just the instant stuff or whatever.
You know, I could see the utilitarian side of it, right? But it's like if I'm out, like, you know, I'll go hunt Idaho, you know, those trips aren't cheap. You know, and I want to have a good time and I want to live and do the things I want to do on the mountain.
And how easy this is.
Yeah.
There is a lot of human error that can go into the instant stuff.
Yeah.
A couple years ago, mm-hmm. made my dad a cup of instant coffee on a hunt, and I like my coffee way stronger than my dad likes his, and accidentally got it switched. And admittedly, the one that I poured intended for myself was way too strong.
Yeah.
That thing looked like it had a head of root beer on it or something like that. And my dad took a sip of that. And he was ready to like shoot to the moon. He had to, you know, sedate himself. around 10
instant, a.m. Instant is a lot of like you're rehydrating coffee solubles. Yeah. You know, so like it can get
a lot of variables.
Western
there.
Pretty quick. The amount of caffeine is in that stuff.
I lived a nightmare visiting my mom a couple years ago. I got to her house. We got there late at night, and you know, 2 hour time difference, and we're used to getting up with the kids, so we're up at like zero in the morning. You know, I'm like, oh God, I need a cup of coffee. And she's got a note on the coffee machine, and it says 2 scoops equals 10 cups of coffee.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, incorrect.
It equals tea.
Wrong.
And then all I can find is decaf. And I'm like, somebody like pinch me or just end it because I'm not in a good place right now.
Yeah.
But luckily I was able to overcome, but that was...
People made fun of Eric and I. We used to work together in a previous life, and we would make, like, motor oil. Red eye.
Yeah.
Like it'll mess you up.
And I really enjoy that. Like, would you... Mm-hmm. I mean, do you like that, or do you like Like what's your optimal
ratios, like soluble to water ratios, like how strong it is?
Like, yeah. Or do you like
the
consist
the viscosity of like the coffee itself?
Do you
like
it gets a little sluggy?
Yeah.
Is,
I guess, the question. I do and I don't. Like, if it's a lighter coffee, I'll tend to go a little heavier.
Yeah.
You know, but really, like, I'll be checking, like, I can look at that and check and see where it's at.
Yeah.
In terms of, like, you know, if you tip the coffee cup over and you see the dark line,
mm-hmm.
yep. you see the light line, and it starts to get lighter, lighter, lighter as it hits the edge of the mug.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that spacing, and that right there tells me that that's pretty spot on for the size of the
interesting.
Mug. Wow. So I'm going to look at that and
learn something new.
Yeah, that's how you visually can check and see how, like in terms of, like, you know, soluble coffee to water ratio, just by looking at it. That's how you can
just kind of like that little halo that's around.
Yeah,
the
edge. Tip it to the coffee goes to the edge of the mug, and then see how far back that light line goes, and then how it gets darker.
Yeah,
if that dark line is right at the edge of the cup, like right at the lip of the cup, that's probably has too much.
That's levitation.
Yeah, that's too much.
Yep.
Coffee solubles to water.
Yeah.
Well, and then we didn't even talk, you know, about light roast versus dark roast.
Or decaf. Those are
we won't talk about that.
I don't know. I guess we'll have our own beliefs.
Yeah, yeah.
It's America.
Yeah.
But so, like, at least, you know, when I started drinking, like, better coffee, right? Like, I was like, oh, dark roast is, like, fancier and that's what you want. But as I learned a little bit more about it, like, it sounds like, you know, maybe not always, but like the lighter roasts are actually where you're going to get some of those more finite, like, flavor notes out of the coffee.
Yeah. So, like, you know, as the roasting process sort of goes on from green to yellow to cinnamon in color, right?
Mm-hmm.
As it goes, the spectrum of color.
Yeah.
Then you start to get into what I call the drinkable stage.
Right? Yeah.
And that's what we call city, full city,
yep.
city plus plus, you know. So coffees that are right at that full city roast profile, which is light, medium light,
mm-hmm.
you're going to get all those delicate flavors, right? So all the stuff that would be gone or masked by a dark roast.
Right.
Because with the dark roast, all you're tasting is smoke and carbon and, you know, all that stuff that you get. You're tasting the roast style. You're not really tasting the coffee itself. So as you get lighter in roast, then you start to pull out those very distinct flavors of where they're grown.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what makes that coffee unique.
Yeah.
And they'll start to come out as the coffee gets light. So, like, with us, yeah, we have the double barrel blend, and yeah, it's a little bit darker, but it's not dark. It's not going to be French roasted coffee. It's going to be a city plus plus, meaning that we're taking that roast in its roast, you know, into the process of roasting. We're bringing it to almost there, right? We call it sweaty coffee. We're bringing it to almost sweaty coffee, meaning the oil's on the outside of the coffee. Right?
Yeah.
But we're not taking it there. We're going to end that process. We're going to get it out of the roaster, mm-hmm. into the cooling tray, and we're going to air quench it to stop the roasting process. So you're going to get that. You're going to get what most people like out of a dark roast is that kind of dark roast flavor, but you're still going to get those distinct flavors for the most part of the coffee.
Right, right. It's almost kind of like a
coffee. But you're not going to taste that smoke and bitter and carbon.
Yeah.
And, mm-hmm. We buy nice coffees. We source nice coffees. There's no point in us, like, roasting them dark where you can't taste the coffees.
Right.
That made them unique. It made them want to buy us to begin with.
Yeah.
Right.
And a lot of time you hear, like, the amount of caffeine in a certain coffee. Like, is that directly tied to the kind of the flavor profiles
Absolutely.
That you'll see?
Absolutely. There's more caffeine in lighter roasted coffees than there is in darker roasted coffees.
Good to know.
Dark
That's
coffee
why I like
has,
it.
Dark coffee has percentage-wise as it's you know, stacked and stacked and stacks, it has like 30% less coffee.
I think you'd think the opposite if you didn't know anything mm-hmm. about it. Like, that's
most
what
people,
I
that's
thought.
A misconception. So they like that. I want this dark, strong, make your hair stand up coffee.
Yeah.
Right.
Really, no, you're getting less caffeine in that coffee. But
you're
what
only
you are getting,
yourself, people.
Yeah, yeah, you're getting more carbon. And a lot of times with people, that more carbon in the coffee makes you feel like there's more caffeine in it in a way. It'll make your stomach feel like there's caffeine in it, like upset, antsy feeling. Yeah.
Poop.
God,
so there's white.
I just love coffee so much, man. I love it.
So there's white coffee,
which
is a thing, right? And, you know, we do it for a few of our locals. I'll actually just come pick it up because I don't really like doing it. But that stuff has like 70% more caffeine than any of it.
And it's, oh, wow.
Yeah, because you have green coffee, which has 100% of the caffeine it's ever going to have.
Yeah.
As the roast process goes on, you're evaporating that coffee out of, or that caffeine out of the coffee. Because coffee roasting is just a, it's just a process of dehydration. You're dehydrating the coffee.
Right.
Right. Browning it.
Yeah.
What's the flavor profile of that white coffee then, though?
I don't never drink it.
Okay.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. I do it as a favor for somebody who does some
not
work.
Into the cat stuff, not
you
into
just,
white
like,
coffee.
See people in alleys passed out, yeah. white coffee broken right by them.
Yeah. We. I'm not going to say it's not bad.
Right.
I've never really drank it because I know, you know, like within cupping coffees, and I know when they're on that lighter end, there's some the flavors that I don't typically care for or like are sought after. Grassy, herby flavors.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Yeah.
Like I'm not a big fan of that kind of a flavor. So like, I just, it's not my thing.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. But it could be somebody else's thing, and it's clearly their thing.
Yeah.
You know.
Man, we just saw the power of coffee right there in a nutshell. When you drank that, and we're like, I love it. We were giving you crap about your mood the other day,
dude.
Now it's like you're a new man.
Oh, positivity levels are through the roof right now.
We flew into Salt Lake, and I was being negative, man. I was harshing the vibe,
and now it's like the world is in balance,
right? It's like everything is good in the world. I mean, their first sip of coffee.
Thank you.
Oh,
yes.
Man.
Yeah. Thank you.
Anytime,
you
guys.
Thank you, Tony.
You've propelled our Friday, our Valentine's Day, into a new
and
level.
And you got some free mugs out of it?
Yeah, man.
It will be
so
a happy
much.
Valentine's
oh,
Day.
Yeah. Yeah.
I forgot it was Valentine's Day today.
Yeah. Well, we'll be your Valentine.
All right.
Yeah, man. let's make this a long-term thing.
Yeah,
exactly.
We should do this again.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, we appreciate it, man.
It was fun.
We usually wrap these up with last calls. Do you have any last calls? Anyone?
I mean, my last call is this. Thanks for enlightening us on all the different facets of coffee. This is absolutely delicious. I know I feel better. Mm-hmm. And
you are better.
Yeah. Thanks, Tony. That was awesome.
Yeah.
Super fascinating.
Happy to be on here, guys, and I'm thankful you guys asked me to do it. You're a great group of guys, and I love talking to you.
Awesome, man. We appreciate it.
Yeah.
Eric, what about you?
Man, I don't know. Believe in the power of coffee is a pretty simple way to sum this up for me.
Yeah.
Yep. Believe in the power of the roast.
I think the biggest thing for me is the last podcast I was on was the burrito cook-off. And like the two take-homes were one, learn about the food that you're eating or drink that you're drinking. And two, like try new things and don't be afraid to outwardly like nice things.
Yeah.
I think people foo-foo that. I think even sometimes in this industry, although you'll be talking about how much you like food or like a certain type if you're a foodie. And there's almost this like aversion to liking nice
or
things.
Or it's like a generational thing.
Yeah.
Like,
like it's not masculine to like, you know, enjoy those things that are just enjoyable.
Yeah.
Right.
Tony, you said it, man. Life's too short.
Yeah.
Drink good coffee, eat good steak. Yep. Like,
look through good optics, drink good coffee.
Yeah, exactly.
Live your best life, drink Dark Timber.
That's right.
But yeah, thank you. I love learning about this stuff. I feel like I've
That's just the tip of the iceberg, too.
Yeah.
I mean, there's we can talk about all types
of
stuff later.
Yeah.
I'm in.
Awesome, man.
Part two from the mountain.
That's right.
Yeah.
You guys know where to find us.
In the field use.
If Tony's bringing the coffee, I'm in.
Yep.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
All right, that'll wrap it up for this episode of the Vortex Nation podcast. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Hit that subscribe button so you can always stay up to date on the latest happenings over here at the Vortex Nation podcast. Leave us a review or comment down below. We want to hear what you have to say about the show, maybe what you like, maybe what you didn't like, so that way we can make these podcasts as good as they can be. You can also follow us on Instagram at Vortex Nation Podcast. We'll be posting about each episode released, so that way you can go back, find these things, maybe grab a little nugget of information that you could take with you to the range, out in the field, or maybe to the kitchen if we're talking about some good food. So, again, everybody, thanks, and happy hunting and shooting. We appreciate it. Have a good one.